from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. With polarization and gridlock in Washington, D.C., the fact is not much governing is going on lately from the nation's capital. But locally, there's not much choice. We've got challenges. Local mayors see them up close. Locavores are running with local food. Local mayors are tackling all the problems they can and hollering to Washington about the help they need beyond. This hour on Point, American mayors and the power and limits of the local in taking on our real challenges. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on, from jobs to health to education to the environment. How much can local government mayors do to tackle our problems? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we'll hear the story of another innovative mayor, former Boston Mayor Thomas Menino, from our own Jack Beatty. But first, three roll-up-their-sleeves mayors are with us from right across the country. From Oklahoma City, Republican Mayor Mick Cornett is here. First elected mayor in 2004, he served four terms, longest-serving mayor ever in Oklahoma City. Named one of the five most innovative mayors in the country by Newsweek in 2012. 2013, Oklahoma Mayor of the Year. He put Oklahoma City on a diet, and the city lost 1 million pounds. Oklahoma City Mayor Mick Cornett, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you with us again.
Always good to be in NPR.
Great to have you here. With us from Tacoma, Washington, is independent mayor Marilyn Strickland, elected in 2010, up from Tacoma City Council, the city's first African-American mayor. She's been called a heavy hitter by the Seattle Times. On the Council on Underserved Communities for the U.S. Small Business Administration, Tacoma Mayor Marilyn Strickland, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And with us from Providence, Rhode Island, is Democratic Mayor Angel Taveras, elected in 2010, city's first Hispanic mayor, named one of the five most innovative mayors by Metropolis Magazine last year. He pulled back Providence from the verge of bankruptcy in just one term. Providence Mayor Angel Taveras, welcome to On Point, sir.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
It's great to have all three of you here. And I just wonder, Angel, let me dive right in with you. Do you feel these days with gridlock in Washington that the weight is on you to get it done locally, whatever getting it done means? And do you feel in a position to take on you're coming to the end of your term now. How's it felt? Have you felt that you've had the power, the position to do what needs doing for your city?
Well, I'll tell you, I think that mayors are very close to the people, and we interact with our constituents every day. And the fact of the matter is that when a constituent has a problem in your city, they look to the mayor to solve that problem. And one of the things that's going on is that it's difficult in terms of the economy is still, it's growing, but it's growing slowly, you don't have the resources to do certain things. I'll give you one example. Our police department in years past were getting millions of dollars in grants from the federal government, and that allowed us to have a larger force. That allowed us to do some different things that we weren't able to do because our funding has been cut so much over the last several years. So it certainly is a challenge, and for mayors, we have to solve problems. People don't want to hear about the issues in Washington being dysfunctional. They want to know how you're going to pave their road, how you're going to improve their school, what's going on with the garbage pickup, and they want to make sure that housing is available and that it's affordable. And so you've got to work on solving problems, and we certainly, I think, are doing more with less all across the country in our cities.
Mayor Strickland in Tacoma, when you look out across the range of issues that your Tacoma residents face, and of course some are very local, and some are very global, but everything touches us locally. How well empowered, how well positioned, or the opposite, do you feel to take on the needs of your citizens?
Well, a lot of people look to their mayors as their touch point in government. So I'm often contacted by my residents, whether it's a federal issue, a state issue, or a local issue. You know, we serve as ambassadors, and we are the people who are on the ground every day. And, you know, there's no such thing as garbage pickup that's partisan. People just want the job done. And, you know, the good news, I think, is that, you know, a lot of us do have strong relationships with Washington, D.C. A lot of the projects that have helped Tacoma have been a direct result of assistance we've received from Washington, D.C. We remediated our waterfront We've done great infrastructure projects. We're trying to expand our light rail in Tacoma, and we will absolutely positively need federal help to do that. We recently met with Senator Patty Murray and Secretary of Transportation Anthony Fox in Seattle 2 days ago, and we talked about the need for the federal government to continue to invest in infrastructure. With that said, however, there are things that we can do on the local level. We know that, you know, gun safety is a really, really big issue right now, and there was really no federal response to it. So in Washington State, for example, there's a ballot measure this November to require universal background checks. As a city council, we decided to require background checks for gun sales on all city-owned facilities. So that was one way we could address the problem locally. And then as a council, we passed a resolution in support of a statewide measure. So we can use our influence, we can use a bully pulpit, but understand, you know, people really depend on us as mayors to try and solve problems, and sometimes they're problems that are beyond the scope of what we actually control.
I mean, everything happens in a context. The environment, certainly. The economy, certainly. Mike Cornett in Oklahoma City, you know, people say it's the economy, stupid, and then people are looking for jobs, and looking for jobs in particular places. Oklahoma City residents, everybody needs a job. When it comes to the economy, how empowered, how well-positioned do you feel to do something about that? Or do you feel always just bouncing on the tide of the national, for that matter, the global economy, Mayor Cornett?
Well, about 20 years ago, we figured out that the secret to economic development was really having a quality of life that would attract people with choices, typically young, highly educated 20-somethings that could live anywhere they wanted. And so we've concentrated on improving the quality of life in Oklahoma City, and we're succeeding. We have the lowest unemployment in the country today.
How low is that, Nick?
It's 4.5.
That's pretty good right now.
We just have not looked to Washington for help. I mean, people in Oklahoma City don't wake up wondering what the federal government's going to do for them today. And we've just kind of figured out we're going to have to help ourselves because nobody's going to help us.
Is that – do I hear politics speaking there when you give us that perspective? You're a Republican, or is that just Washington's not there to do it, or you don't want them to be there to do it?
Well, we remember the 1980s when 100 banks failed in the state of Oklahoma, and our economy was you know, at the bottom of every economic measure. And we just decided we were going to have to pull ourselves out of it. So, no, I think it was just a matter of us taking responsibility for ourselves. And today, there's some politics in that. Just, you know, the partisanship at Washington is unbelievable. And it's certainly not in the, you know, the citizens' best interest to you know, to have to watch the gridlock in Washington. And so I think, you know, we kind of had a head start on the idea that, you know, we need to take care of our own infrastructure needs. We can't rely on Washington, but we can, you know, determine what we do here. It's worked for us so far.
How much of your good unemployment rate compared to the rest of the nation? Nationally, what, 5.9% in September? Yours, 4.5%. That's much better. Is that gas and energy? Is that good Oklahoma luck right now, or is it something else, Mayor Cornett?
Well, it's the Coffin Foundation said we were the most entrepreneurial city in the country with the most startups per capita. It's just this immigration of highly educated 20-somethings coming here. So people with jobs to create are coming here, and it's all working for us. But it's energy, it's aviation. Boeing has a large presence here. It's biomedical, and it's tourism.
Mayor Strickland, there you are right next to Seattle, Microsoft, plenty of high tech up that way. Is it helpful to you to be in the proximity to Seattle? Does Tacoma have to stake its own economic claim somehow? How do you work on the economy?
So we in Tacoma are very, very proud to be part of the greater metropolitan Seattle region. So we do benefit from that. And people sometimes say to me, oh, what's it like to be in Seattle's shadow? And I say, no, we actually get to bask in their glow. And, you know, as a city, we have our own very strong, fierce identity. We are a historically blue-collar, working-class city. But also, you know, there's some great things that are happening. You know, we are really growing our sector in healthcare, in cybersecurity. We have a port, Port of Tacoma, which is one of the largest ports on the West Coast. So our economy is very, very diverse. Our unemployment rate is slightly higher than it is in Washington, you know, for the average in Washington State, but it's pretty consistent with the national average. And I think as Mayor Cornett, you know, very, very wisely stated, entrepreneurship is really going to be the key to economic recovery. Even if you look at some of these great brands and companies coming out of Seattle, whether it's Microsoft, whether it's Amazon, whether it's Starbucks, whether it's Nordstrom, these were all local companies that went global. So really, it's about having a climate in your city that promotes entrepreneurship. We have a great program in the city of Tacoma with the University of Washington Tacoma called VIBE, and it's Veterans Incubator for Better Business. And we are encouraging veterans as they're transitioning out of the military to become entrepreneurs. So, you know, as Mayor Cornett said, growing your entrepreneurship class is really going to be the key long term to innovation and growing the type of economy that you want to have in your city.
Mayor Taveras, we just have a minute before the break here, but in Providence, where are you looking for economic growth? How's unemployment right now, and where have you looked?
Well, in the state of Rhode Island, and we are obviously the smallest state in the union. The state of Rhode Island, unfortunately, we have had one of the highest unemployment rates in the country, and the city of Providence is slightly higher. Now, over the last 18 months in the city of Providence, we've actually had the lowest unemployment rate for each month since the 2008 financial crisis. So we're headed in the right direction, but we need to accelerate that the job growth here in our state and in our city as well. And we're very fortunate. We have outstanding universities here in the city, from Brown University to Rhode Island School of Design, Providence College, Johnson & Wales. And they really cover a broad range, from culinary to art to one of the best Ivy League schools in the country. So we're working with them, with our hospitals, and also with young people, entrepreneurs, because they are really the wave of the future, and we're seeing that growth in our city as well.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour with mayors from across the country about local solutions to national, global problems, and how far local can go. The power of the mayor. With us, Mayor Mick Cornett. He is mayor of Oklahoma City, Republican there. Mayor Marilyn Strickland from Tacoma, Washington, an independent politically there in Tacoma. And Mayor Angel Taveras from Providence, Rhode Island, Democrat. Lots doing, lots of things. Here's Democratic Mayor Ari Garcetti of Los Angeles explaining to LA News Station KTLA in September why he wants to raise the minimum wage in LA to $13.25 an hour by 2017, up from $9 an hour now in LA.
Poverty is bad for business. We have about 27% of people in this city right now live in poverty. And to put that in perspective, it isn't just entry-level jobs anymore. We have 567,000 people who earn the minimum wage but can't live off of it.
Here's Democratic Mayor Bill de Blasio, New York City, promising New Yorkers universal pre-K during his campaign in September. 50,000 four-year-olds got access to free full-day preschool. Here from a video his office released last week entitled Every Single Child.
We have a crisis when it comes to education. The answer is not to find an escape route that some can follow and others can't. The answer is to fix the entire system.
I don't know if our mayors today have piano in the background whenever they speak, but that's very, very nice right there. And here's San Diego Mayor, Republican Kevin Falconer, promising to address homelessness in San Diego.
No man, woman, or child, or veteran should ever have to sleep on the street. It's not right. It's not part of our values. And our work will not be done until all San Diegans have the opportunity for a roof over their heads at night.
San Diego's mayor addressing homelessness. But what is within the grasp of mayors and what may not be? Callers for all three of our mayors across the country today. Well, here's one from Atlanta, Georgia. Luke, thank you for calling. You're on the air, Luke.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, listen, mayors can really bring a lot of new and exciting things to cities. But the question that I have, Los Angeles has addressed climate change, which is a national and global issue, by allowing driverless vehicles on their roads, thus reducing the number of cars in general on the roadways. What sort of things can mayors do to cheerlead that sort of process, as well as any other fledgling technologies that are green and that can address climate change? What can mayors do to cheer that on?
It's a great question, Luke, and I'll take it to our mayors. But first, tell us, how do driverless cars affect emissions or bring them down?
Well, it's a matter of access over ownership. I think when you live in a big city that's bustling, a lot of people ride bikes and don't own cars. I think even more, and the trend will catch on and is catching on, that the more cars that you have that are driving themselves, the less you have the need to own the car itself,
Got it.
Thus reducing the amount entirely.
So by permitting those on the roads, maybe that's a step in that direction. The environment's a big deal. It's as global as it gets. It's local as well. Marilyn Strickland, how do you think about the environment? How do you begin to take that on? What measures have you looked at in Tacoma?
Well, first of all, we start with recognizing that climate change does in fact exist and it's real. And, you know, as mayors, there are many things we can do. The issue here is often around land use policies. So if we are creating land use policies that promote dense, walkable, compact neighborhoods where people don't have to spend a lot of time in their cars to get to and from work or to run errands, then we're actually addressing that problem. The council recently passed, as part of our update of our comp plan, an option for people to consider electric charging stations in new construction. You know, we're doing things, for example, like increasing our tree canopy from 19% to 30% in the future. We are absolutely positively promoting, you know, more bike lanes and bikeways. Our garbage truck fleet, for example, a lot of it has gone to fuel that's sustainable. Our bus fleet at Pierce Transit uses, uses natural gas. And so there are things that we can do that we absolutely have control over. But I would say the biggest impact that mayors can have is really how we do land use policy and planning and how we try and discourage sprawl and drive populations into our city centers.
Mayor Cornett, there in Oklahoma City, you're in the oil patch. Do your constituents want to hear about climate change issues, fossil fuels, alternatives? How do you look at environmental issues and measures that you can take?
Well, I believe in pretty much the same steps that Mayor Strickland referred to. We are also, you know, transitioning to cleaner burning fuels like natural gas and things that we think are going to be more sustainable long term. I believe we're the largest city in the country that's still in compliance with the Clean Air Act. So our air is relatively clean compared to the rest of the country. But, you know, we share this planet with China. And as long as China is going to be, you know, so reckless with their emissions, it concerns me long term, and you know, how the United States is going to lead the way in this effort if we don't get partners around the world to join us.
We've got, even in the oil patch, people taking steps on this front. Democratic Mayor Anise Parker in Houston, shortlist contender for the 2014 World Mayor Prize, recently helped launch the Mayor's National Climate Action Agenda. It's a city-to-city outreach effort for improving green policies. At her 2014 State of the City address in Houston, Mayor Parker said Houston, of all places, would continue to be a leader, she said, on sustainable energy.
We will continue to solidify Houston's reputation as a green city. I have committed to reducing the city of Houston's greenhouse gas emissions by another 10%, for a total reduction of 36% since 2007. Our achievement is impressive, but we're not going to stop there. We will continue to work to find energy efficiencies and opportunities to leverage the private sector's engagement in reducing greenhouse gas emissions.
And here at the State of the City speech in January, Mayor Ralph Becker, Salt Lake City, invited a fourth grade class to sing a song they'd written about cleaning the air, something Becker hopes to address.
If we don't start to clean our air, then we'll see people start to get sick. Do not burn, only drive in pairs, or you can ride on transit. It doesn't show signs of
Mayor Taveras, fourth graders there to the tune of Let It Snow saying clean the air. Environmental issues are so big. Do you feel overwhelmed when you look at them? Or do you feel as a mayor you can have a significant impact?
Well, it's hard to follow those fourth graders, but I'll try. No, let me tell you, I think Mayor Strickland is right. And that is that, one, it's important that we are aware of it and we make sure that our cities and our residents understand it. Here in Providence, one of the things that I did, I hired the first director of sustainability. We had a sustainability office that was created by the city council, but that position had never been filled. And I thought it was very important for us as a city to be focused on sustainability. And she's done an outstanding job in terms of helping us to not only increase awareness, but also increase recycling, change the way we think of things, focus on stormwater, focus on climate change and greening our buildings, So there's a lot that can be done at the local level that to have an impact. I know in New York City, Mayor Bloomberg worked on cooling buildings by painting them the roofs white. And that was mm-hmm. something that was very helpful as well. Cities are where things are happening. And so I absolutely believe that you can have an impact in our cities. And the more that mayors do, the better off we are. And certainly with climate change, we must lead on climate change.
Ryan in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Ryan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very libertarian-leaning person, and I absolutely believe in state and local governments. Should have much more power than they do, that we have ceded entirely too much power to the federal government, as they generally tend to create more problems and then propose the solution, which in turn creates more problems. So I'm 100% for more local government and state government, as it better represents the people and the individuals in different regions. The federal government exists only to protect our individual liberties, our private property, and provide defense from, you know, foreign invasion.
Ryan, we've got it. Let me take that to Mayor Strickland in Tacoma. You're our independent politically here today, Marilyn Strickland. How does that strike your ear? Do you want that? Feds back off. We'll take care of it, or not?
Well, first I want to I want to clarify that I'm actually a Democrat, but I run nonpartisan. So I think that's how the press picked up on this idea that I'm an independent. So I'm actually a Democrat. But with that said, local government is always bipartisan. And, you know, again, we are having to focus on the objective and the outcome and not getting dragged into partisan politics. Government works best when it all works well together. So, you know, when the federal government is adequately funding transportation and fulfilling their duty to deal with some of the big issues like immigration reform and marriage equality, those things trickle down to the local level. For example, community block grants have been cut consistently over the past decade, and that's money that comes to local communities. And so I appreciate the libertarian point of view that really limits what the federal government should do. But we all have to work together, and we have to have good partners at both the federal and state level. And one example is, you know, the whole conversation that's taking place right now about, you know, minimum wage and paid sick leave. Those should be federal or state policies, and now you're seeing local governments having to take that on because we're not getting action at the levels where those things should take place. We're the only developed nation that doesn't have a paid sick leave policy at the national level, and that shouldn't happen. So, you know, I can understand the need for independence, but there are some responsibilities that the federal government should have and they should fulfill.
So take away the political finesse for a second. Do you sit in your office some days with your crew there and say, you know, we're up against it. We're at the limit of what we can do locally. If Washington doesn't get its act together, we can't govern Tacoma properly, or not?
Well, I mean, I think there are two points to that. There's the whole conversation of governance, and part of that is the whole responsibility of getting things done. And often it tends to do with building things. So, for example, if I'm talking about trying to improve public transportation in the city of Tacoma, and I mentioned earlier, you know, we're trying to build out our light rail system,
yep.
We need federal help to do that because we are not a tax-rich city that has the resources to put all of our funds into that. You know, in addition to all the other responsibilities, we have a police department to run, we have a firefighters that we have to take care of, and we have a lot of other responsibilities. So having support at the federal level really helps us do some things that we need to do. And again, it's about connecting the dots. When we have better public transportation options, we are more attractive to people who are creative, who want to come live in our cities. When we have a talent pool like that, we're more likely to attract high-paying jobs. And so you have to connect the dots between federal government, state government, and local government.
Mayor Cornett, where are you on that spectrum of cut us loose or back us up, please, when it comes to the federal government?
Well, I think it's a reminder that local governments first have to take care of their own needs to the extent that we can. You know, one of my biggest frustrations with Congress is their unwillingness to help us on the Main Street Fairness Act, which is really just helping us collect taxes that are already due over sales that are currently taking place over the internet. In Oklahoma City, that could mean, you know, 100 or 150 police officer positions.
Is that an internet sales tax, Mayor Cornett?
Well, it's taxes, yes, that are currently due, but it's difficult for local governments to collect these taxes, and Congress could fix it just by, you know, closing the loophole. And it is fixed in some situations, depending on where the internet retailer has physical locations. But in the grand scheme of things, we just need Congress to act on it. And I'm hopeful in the lame duck session we can get some movement on that. But that would make a significant, step toward realizing that local governments could use help.
What about on the transportation front, Mayor Strickland raises? On the immigration front, we've seen no reform there for many years.
Yeah, no, it's very frustrating, and to have our citizens want action on issues like immigration, and for us to not even have the enabling legislation to actually enforce the immigration laws of the country. Mexico's not securing its southern border or its northern border, and you're just seeing the continuing evolution of a country that just doesn't seem to be taking care of the small details. We're just so frustrated at the mayoral level. You'd think something like a transportation bill would be something that could have bipartisan support. You'd think we get help for infrastructure. I mean, how can infrastructure suddenly become a partisan issue? We're having to take care of those things at the local level and look for the private sector to continue to look for public-private partnerships.
Angel Taveras, when we hear Mayor Cornett put it just that way, some of this nice talk about local initiative and the power of a mayor seems to, the seams start to show here. When he says he's frustrated. Mayors are frustrated. They need to be backed up. Even simple things like infrastructure. I wonder if there's too much romance around what can be done locally. Are we overestimating it if we don't have government at all levels working together, Mayor Taveras?
Well, let me say I agree with Mayor Cornett that we are frustrated. There's no doubt about that. We have real problems to solve, real issues, and we see them each and every day. And sometimes I think that Congress just doesn't get it. I think they're spending too much time in Washington and maybe not enough time in their districts. Because when you have a government shutdown, as we did last year, and you have people who can't agree that funding early childhood education is a good thing for the future of this country, that's a problem. We have an interstate highway system. We have that because of the federal government and the help that we receive there. There are certainly things that we must do on the local level ourselves. And I agree with Mayor Cornett on that as well, that we have to take care of our cities ourselves. But there are also issues that we cannot do. We simply do not have the resources to do without the help of the federal government. And the fact that this government, the federal government, they can't seem to get a budget passed. I would ask my fellow mayors, I don't think that we go very long without a budget being passed in our cities because we have real problems to solve. Yet we continue to have continuing resolutions at the federal level.
What do your federal representatives say when you say, "Hey, look, we're mayors. We need the federal budget to integrate with our budget. We need it done." What comes back to you, Mayor Taveras?
Well, I'll tell you. We are very fortunate here in Rhode Island. Our delegation is led by Senator Jack Reed in the U.S. Senate, and he's done a wonderful job for us here. We're actually we're about to graduate some new police officers on Friday, and it's because of grants that we got from the federal government, thanks to Senator Reed leading the way. So we've been very, very fortunate there, but we need Congress to act, and we need them to put partisanship aside and start solving the problems that are facing Americans all across this country, in our cities and in rural areas as well.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today with mayors from across the country about local solutions to national problems and how far local can go, the power of the mayor and its limits. Mick Cornett is with us, mayor of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Marilyn Strickland is here, Tacoma, Washington mayor, runs as an independent, a Democrat, she lets us know. Angel Taveras is with us, mayor of Providence, Rhode Island, Democrat, first Hispanic mayor elected there in 2010, and with us from Providence today. Here in April, Mayor Kevin Johnson of Sacramento, California, gave his first speech as president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. He said cities are the new engine of prosperity in America, that in economic growth, mayors have always been where the rubber meets the road.
The neat thing is about mayors, we don't want to be on the sidelines. We don't want to wait on Washington to solve our problems. We don't want to point fingers. We don't have time to deal with the bickering that goes back and forth between Democrats and Republicans. We don't have that luxury. We have a responsibility to get things done at the local level, and there's tons of mayors here today that certainly represent that.
We have listeners responding to all three of you mayors today. Here's Eric, who says, bravo to these communities seeking to take charge of their own destiny in the face of pallid leadership elsewhere. And others having little fun. And Leah here, maybe in New York, says, where the heck was Bill de Blasio this weekend while I was cleaning my entire apartment with no help? I don't know how hands-on mayors are expected to be exactly. Maybe not that hands-on. David in Watertown, Massachusetts. David, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Okay.
An interesting example of the kind of logjam, a political logjam people are talking about is wastewater. Biggest energy cost for any locality, municipality, is the electrical energy needed to clean sewage.
Okay.
I've heard estimates from knowledgeable people, for example, that Boston, the MWRA, wastes about 90% of the potential energy in that water. The EPA is, because of our political logjam, is, you know, enforcing laws that are 30, 40 years out of date in terms of what's technologically possible. People should look at the city of Ridgewood, New Jersey, small town, 25,000 people. They recover 100% of the energy they need to clean their sewage from the sewage, and they have extra energy.
David, I'm not sure I understand. How do they do that? They're fermenting something. They're taking heat and using that for energy. How do you recover?
No, anaerobic digestion.
Uh-huh.
They remove the sludge, but they have to do it in an up to date, sophisticated way.
Right.
They generate methane from the sludge. They burn the methane. They produce electricity.
Got it.
And they use that to. It's very sophisticated, but not difficult. It's off the shelf technology, but. Municipalities and local governments are wasting billions of dollars across the country by cleaning their wastewater in an old
inefficiently
way.
And you say the EPA is slowing them down. I don't know. Do any of our three mayors here today, Strickland, Cornett, Taveras, have experience with this issue?
Well, I don't know about that specific issue, but I know that the city of Tacoma's central wastewater treatment plant actually is very technologically advanced, and we consistently win awards. And the good news about the Pacific Northwest is that we have hydroelectric power, which tends
lucky
to be power
you.
That
yeah.
is very, very low cost to begin with. And we even have a product in Tacoma, which is called Tagro, and it's fertilizer. And we literally take the biosolids of the material, we recycle them, and we turn them into Tagro fertilizer. So people come by the truckloads, and they get this Tagro product for gardening. And so mm-hmm. we are very, very innovative when it comes to dealing with our wastewater treatment.
Angel Taveras, how about the federal government and wastewater, a big issue for all communities?
Well, yes. Here in Providence, the city is not in control of the wastewater. We have a state authority. Again, Rhode Island's only 1 million people, so we have the Narragansett Bay Commission. I will tell the caller, though, that one of the things that we were very supportive of in the city, the Narragansett Bay Commission wanted to really install two new wind turbines to lower their energy costs, and we were very supportive of that because they're located in our city. And I know that that's worked very, very well for them in terms of lowering energy costs and using wind power to do that. So a little bit different than what he's talking about in terms of the way of using the treatment of the wastewater to generate energy, but we certainly are always looking for ways to really reduce our energy costs and be supportive of the state agencies that are doing that as well.
Mayor Cornett, I think I heard you there as well. Water an issue in all communities.
Well, I would just say the EPA is occasionally the mayor's friend, but generally not. And our landfills, we're capturing methane gas and reusing it, and turning it into fuel to fire up our trucks. So I think everybody's interested in these new technologies and then the public-private partnerships that can make them happen. But it's not the federal government that's providing assistance. It's the private sector that's coming in and working on solutions with us.
And when you say generally not your friend, why? Because their requirements are stringent and therefore require more local spending? Is that the issue?
Yes, there's unfunded mandates that typically come with some of those things.
Presumably, they believe that will leave us with cleaner environment?
Presumably, but I would just say that one size does not fit all. And you know, they provide a regulation that may or may not be appropriate for that community and the other things that are going on in that community. We have to pass those costs on to our citizens, you know, they throw up their hands and say, you know, why is this happening to us?
You know, we heard a couple of years ago now from Bruce Katz and Jennifer Bradley, they had this book, The Metropolitan Revolution. They talked there about an inversion of the hierarchy of power in the United States they saw going on. A new growth model, they said, successful cities practice, you know, making things happen locally. And it's pretty thrilling, and it goes along with the cultural trend toward locavore and everything else. But I wonder, Mayor Cornett, where do you think we are in the arc of that? Have we maxed out on the responsibility that local communities can take? Is there still a lot of room to run there to address the big problems we have in this country? What's the balance of power, and is it working?
Well, the problem is that, you know, everybody has a taxing capacity in your local community. And it's very difficult if you're going to start transitioning responsibilities from the federal or state down to the local levels. You're going to need those other levels of government to reduce their taxation. And that's not happening. In Oklahoma City, we've gotten a long ways with a penny on the dollar sales tax for a certain number of years that our citizens have repeated over and over again that we've used to help build the infrastructure of the city. But in most communities, there's just an anti-tax environment based on the overbearance of the federal government that doesn't allow local governments to be as creative as they'd like.
Mayor Strickland, how about it? If you want to really unleash local power, you need to rein to pull back federal government taxing anyway, Mayor Cornett says. What do you think?
Well, I think for us in Washington State, it is about the fact that we have the most regressive tax structure in the country. So we rely very, very heavily on sales tax. So Mayor Cornett, you know, is lucky so that he can go to his voters and say, you know, I want to increase something by a penny. And the overall sales tax rate isn't that high. So I agree with him where I think that, you know, one of the things that I often look for when I'm dealing with my state legislatures, like, give us local control and let us decide how we want to try and raise revenue and do things. And I think for some legislators, they think that giving you local control means that they're voting for a tax increase, and that's not what they're doing. But we're just saying, let us decide what's best for our community. But, you know, the situation for us in Tacoma and in Washington State cities is going to be a little different because we have, again, this very regressive high sales tax. And so asking people to add to that is a very different ask than asking someone to add a penny to something that's somewhere hovering between 4% and 5%.
We just have the three of you for another minute. Mick Cornett, you gained national acclaim a few years back for asking Oklahoma Cityans to go on a diet and lose £1 million collectively in the city. You did it. Boston tried that, and I don't think we succeeded in Boston. Have you kept the weight off, Mr. Mayor?
Well, I have personally, and I would like to think we're a healthier community. We've kind of used that awareness campaign now to start changing the built environment. So now we're building hundreds of miles of sidewalks. We're heavily landscaping our streets, trying to be more pedestrian friendly, and trying to design a people not around cars, but around people. And we'll see if we can design a city in that regard going forward.
Mayors looking to shape life in good ways right in their local communities. Mayor Cornett in Oklahoma City, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
You bet.
Mayor Strickland in Tacoma, Washington, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
And Mayor Angel Taveras in Providence, Rhode Island. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
In a moment, we'll hear the story of Boston's five-term former mayor, Thomas Menino, from On Point's own Jack Beatty. The longest-serving mayor in the history of Boston stepped down early this year. Thomas Menino, one of the longest-serving mayors in the country, an up-from-the-neighborhoods politician, leader who got his hands deep in the city's maintenance and development. Former Mayor Menino is just out with a memoir co-written with On Point's own news analyst, Jack Beatty. Jack joins us now to look at a get-it-done mayor and his memoir, A Mayor for a New America. Jack, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's just hear the sound of Tom Menino for a moment. This is an interview he did with WBUR, where I am right now in December of 2013, explaining his approach to his job.
It's all about people. You know, I can do a lot of big buildings, but how we treat the people, how we improve the quality of life in Boston, you know, that's all I've ever done. Nothing special, just being good to people.
Jack, introduce us to Tom Menino. Bostonians know him well. The rest of the country may have some sense. That's a very distinctive voice right there. Where did this mayor come from, and how did he stay in for so long?
Well, he came from Hyde Park, which is really one of the distant areas of the city. Indeed, you can reach Boston from the New Hampshire border faster than you can reach Hyde Park from the center of Boston. It's way out there. And partly because he was out in this this almost semi-rural area, at least to people downtown, he sort of snuck up on the political establishment and became mayor through a series of switches. Essentially, the incumbent mayor appointed ambassador to the Vatican by Bill Clinton. He became mayor. He was acting mayor. He showed he could do the job and was elected and then reelected and reelected and reelected. And his secret, I think, is right there in that soundbite, the human factor. He was raised, in fact, he says himself that he owed his success to his parents' values. Respect everybody. Treat everybody with respect. Work hard. Provide for your family. And those basic values, I think, have held him in good stead with the electorate. When he left office, there was one headline said, Menino more popular than kittens. It was 83% in one poll. And why? Because he paid, he was called an urban mechanic, and he didn't take that as a slight. He really saw that the problem of government is credibility. You've got to serve, you've got to meet people where they are. If it's their pothole on their street, you got to fill it. They don't, you know, if it's if the light is out, you got to fix the light. He kept lists in, you know, before the internet, and would run around in the next day and say, you know, did you fix that? When he'd see things around the city that were amiss, he'd check with people. Is that fixed? Is that fixed? Is that fixed? This sounds like small stuff. It's big because it puts in the bank credibility. The one thing the federal government today does not have, and one reason is it just doesn't seem to work to so many people. Tom Menino made government work, or he conveyed the appearance that government was working. Often that's the same thing. And people believed him on that small stuff so that he could do a lot of big stuff in terms of development and crime control and so on.
Jack, let us look at that here. There's been a lot of talk about everything going local and with the federal government kind of paralyzed. We've just been talking with mayors from Oklahoma City, Tacoma, Providence, Rhode Island. Here's Tom Menino, the great urban mechanic. How far can an urban mechanic climb up that ladder of needs and challenges? And you know what they are. They're very big things, all the way from jobs and education to the environment, real global issues. Looking at Tom Menino's story, how high up that sort of hierarchy of challenges can a mayor climb?
I think he went as high as you can locally. He did everything he could to, in the early 90s when he took office, there was a recession, the federal government wasn't helping. Boston, I think, showed how a city can essentially do counter-cyclical spending itself, can raise its own economy by building. You know, building is the sort of the way cities create jobs. Build it and they will work. And as anybody who has seen the skyline of Boston over the years can attest, Boston has just boomed under this mayor. That's not an accident. It's not just because conditions nationally were propitious. In some cases, they were the opposite. It's because he went out of his way. He encouraged. He expedited. He moved things along. He kept a white-knuckle grip on development, always understanding that that it was about jobs, jobs, jobs.
Tough reputation. Don't cross this mayor. How's that look to you as a public persona for getting things done locally? Don't mess with me.
I think it was very important to him. I mean, you know, the columnists were always saying, oh, he's too harsh, he's too this, and he cops to that. He says, I sure was. I demanded the best from my people because the public demanded the best from me. And my gosh, how in the federal government we have seen mediocrities just kept in appointed and going on. No one fired for anything, it seems, sometimes in the federal government. In the Menino administration, you did the job or you left. And that you know, if it gave him a hard-edged reputation with some columnists, it made the people feel, well, this guy's looking after our money.
Give us a story that help us know a little better, especially for listeners around the country, this leader in this locale, Tom Menino.
Well, you know, I think the most important thing in his administration was what he did on the subject of race. Boston was torn apart, as you know, in the 70s by busing. He came just as Boston was emerging from that. And I think the evidence is clear. I mean, he carried the African-American areas of the city by 3-1, sometimes by 4-1. And why was that? Well, partly because he would not tolerate racism in any shape or form. And why was that? Because he had had, as he puts it, a very small experience with prejudice that stayed with him all his life. When he was in primary school, the teacher, I think it was a nun, basically said, how do you, you know, that he had spelled his name wrong. It should have been spelled with an A. And then she said, you Italians don't know how to spell. As he says, that's a small thing. But you know what? You build your character around generalizing the small hurts you've had to the big hurts that are in history and that other people face. And I think he did that. And there's no doubt that the racial climate in Boston is far greater because he was a mayor. He made a huge difference in the big moral question of Boston as it looks forward to its history, its future as a majority-minority city.
Jack Beatty, co-author with Thomas Menino of the book Mayor for a New America. Jack, thanks for the work and thanks for being with us today. Great to have you right here.
Thank you very much.
On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Catherine Brewer, Abigail Collins, Julie Jopp, Sam Gail Rosen, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, James Ross, and Dean Russell, with help from Amanda Gomez and Madeline Moore. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.